I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
All right, y'all. Happy Thursday. Oh, man. I love it. We almost got through the week fully. I'm heading to Seattle tomorrow. So if you're in Seattle, come on out. SexualHealthAlliance.com. I'll be doing 2 lectures, book signing. Come see me, Seattle. I've never been. It's going to be my first time. So stoked about the weather. I like the cool weather. I've been loving the cooler weather here in LA. I'm excited to go up north. I'm a Northern California kind of guy. And I know Seattle's well beyond that. But I like the cool weather, man. I'm only in SoCal for the career, for the gigs. Otherwise, yeah, I'd be running up there. The rain keeps me happy. Question of the night's up on our Love Line IG page. Tonight's question is signs that your relationship's falling apart. Yep, the good, the bad, the ugly. We're going to be breaking it on down. Also doing couples therapy with Rebecca Shida, licensed family therapist. Me and her are going to be breaking down the signs that are good predictors your relationship's falling apart, and also talking about different relational styles. Later in the show, also talking about how to maintain a long-distance relationship. Not ideal, can be done. But let's talk about some important news. World's first contraception for men. Yes, it's finally going to happen. Oh, penis owners, y'all gonna have to step up. It's gonna be available soon, maybe within 6 months. That's pretty fast and furious. It's coming out of India, and it's gonna be injection-based. 97% success rate, 97.3%. That's pretty good. It's better than condoms. No side effects in these clinical trials. Now, again, the clinical trials only had 300 people, so, you know, there's a lot more to be said. But it works by an injection into the sperm-containing tube near the testes. Don't panic, y'all. It's just a little shot. I'll hold your hand while we do it. You know what I mean? I'll hold your hand while we do it, as mom used to say. This is a kicker. A company canceled a woman's job interview after she inquired about pay and benefits. Oh, yeah, that's what's going on. Y'all know why we work. Not for the love of it. It's often because, you know, we want to eat, pay rent, live, buy things. So a company called Skip the Dishes, she had actually had an interview that went well. It was before the second interview. They basically said she had the nerve to ask about compensation and benefits and then took away the second interview. That's gross. Why can we not ask about pay? We should know that up front. I don't want to waste my time or anyone else's time if the pay is no good. Like, that should be something we should lead with. And it's really problematic when you're offended that a job applicant wants to understand what, you know, what working there will do for them. Companies act like they're giving you something. Employees are giving you something too, because without employees, you got no business. But God bless her. Twitter's on fire over it. But yeah, God forbid someone want to have healthcare and eat. The company takes away her job interview. Oh my God. Because people act like we work for the love of it. Are you kidding? Some jobs, you know, like I like being on the radio. Wouldn't do it for free. All right. Anyway, a little warning. Condoms. Yep. They expire sometimes even before the date on the package. Yeah. A lot of people don't even check the date on the package. But got to worry a little bit more, because those that have spermicide in the lubricant on it, which not all of them do, but a decent number, that's actually going to knock that 3 to 5 years down about 2 years, because it corrodes at the condom. Also, not everyone seems to know this, it's supposed to keep them in cool, dry places. So if they're in your pocket, in your wallet, in your car, and any way exposed to sunlight, yep, those aren't going to last that long either. That's going down real quick. But that's where a lot of people, you know, keep them. Oh, this condom, I've had them in this Ziploc pocket for 10 years. Still good. No, it's not. Throw that nasty, nasty thing away. Basically, they're saying if it appears dry or cracked or leaking, it's expired. God bless. You know, people are still like, it's fine. It's fine. It's just a little crack. It's just leaking a little bit. We're good. We're good. Let me in there. Let me in there. God bless. Who uses condoms? Get on prep, y'all. Condoms are good. If you're going to use them, we want the Trojan condoms. But check the expiration dates. That's what you need to be doing. And if not, get on that prep. Goodbye, y'all. It was nice working with you. I will not be back. tonight's my last night. Read between those lines, y'all. Okay. I'm going to talk about later in the show. Stick around for this one because I'm not going to break it down now. I want to so badly because I'm so stoked to break this down for you guys. I'm looking at a piece of research that talks about the average timeline in a normal relationship, whatever that means, based on certain things that people will do. How far into the relationship will they start to do certain things? Wait till you hear this. So I'm holding off on doing that one now, but I'm biting at the bit over it. But I'll land with this. Because again, remember, this girl just got fired, or I'm sorry, she did not get her second interview because she had the nerve to ask about pay and benefits. This one's pretty bad too. There's a poet, a gay poet, about to get his book of poetry published. For those that aren't published, just know it's a very difficult thing to get things published these days, or in general, especially things like poetry. So he's super excited. He then gets an email from the publisher saying, yeah, you know what? We're going to rescind our offer because of photos you put on your IG. Now, we all know the rules of Instagram. Clearly, he wasn't naked. Not that that should have mattered, because remember, you're publishing his poetry. But yeah, they cared. Basically, ready for this one? They told him that one of the women in our office became, and I quote, very, very upset and confused about all the nudity. There's not a lot of nudity on IG. And even if there is, what does him showing his butt have to do with his ability to sell poetry books? Please know it'll probably sell more of them. Because when I post anything as close to nudity as I can on my IG, I get thousands of likes. I post something smart, I get like hundreds. So sex sells, y'all. Which means I got to step up my nudie game. But I'm just saying. Basically, someone else from the company said that their 7-year-old daughter found her mom's phone, saw the pictures, and started crying. Give me a break. If your daughter cries over seeing a man's butt, we got a lot of work to do. So basically, they said that the women felt, and I quote again the publisher, creeped out. Oh my God. We have so much work to do. Please send them copies of my books, Sex Outside the Lines and Rebel Love. They got some work to do. That's currently what's going on in our culture. It breaks my heart and bums me out. You know what I mean? The sex phobia is everywhere. So question night is up on our Loveline IG page. And then we're going to be doing a little couples therapy. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Now it's time for some couples therapy. So we got Rebecca Sheeta with us, licensed therapist. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well. You seem like you're in a good mood this week. Not that you were in a bad mood last week. You were just like in a bathroom stall peeing while we did our
segment. I was not
peeing
in the stall. I was in a hallway on the floor
of a
corporate office.
I know you too well.
I'm doing well. I'm better this week.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just give a quick shout out to your show coming up?
Oh, great. Yes. I'll be at the Comedy Store on December 20th in the original room at 7 p.m. $15 cash at the door.
That's awesome.
To a drink minimum.
And you're a funny lady.
I think I am.
You're actually becoming a triple threat because you're therapist, comedian, pole dancer.
And a pole dancer. I have a huge bruise to prove it.
Yeah. I'm proud of you, though.
Do you want to see my bruise?
I saw on social media. Yeah.
Okay.
You put it all out there in all ways. So I had a couple things I want to talk about tonight. Later, we'll break down a few things, but I just wanted to bring a topic up that I keep seeing in the news, and I think it's really fascinating. And it's this whole idea of couples living apart while together.
Hmm.
And there's an acronym for it, and it got news, because of Gwyneth Paltrow
acknowledging that.
And I just think it's such an interesting concept. And when I was in Chicago 2 weeks ago doing a training, which, by the way, I'm going to be in Seattle this weekend, so come on out.
Woo.
But I was talking about it, and two of the therapists in the audience put their hands up, and they're like, we've done that. And the one woman, it was really beautiful the way she walked us through it. She was saying, you know, I was married, and I didn't want to leave my partner. She's like, you know, me and my husband had a great marriage. Things were rough. And I just felt like while still being with him, I just needed more me time. We had been together for 5 years, she said. And she's like, we could afford it. I got a second place. And now we're back in the same home again. But she's like, it was the most powerful 2 years of my life.
Hmm.
I could see where it'd be threatening to some people, depending on what's going on. But I love the idea that we're expanding options because, I mean, weigh in on this. Sometimes to just stay in the home might be too toxic or intensifying.
Right. I don't know. Maybe it's just coming from my own history. I feel like if I don't want to live with somebody, then I just shouldn't live with them, period. That's kind of where I'm at.
But what a beautiful way to practice and see.
Right. I mean, I guess it also depends on what it is you're struggling with. What are the issues? Is it in a way what I don't know if she's also describing sort of like a trial sort of separation and then coming back together. I mean, that's nice if that can work. I don't know if that could work for me, but I haven't been in that kind of situation. I've been in a situation where I better get out. I haven't been in one of those situations.
If you're seeing a lot of red flags, it's not time to get a second house. It's time to relocate.
You know, you're really abusive and you're really mistreating me, but if I just live in a separate apartment, I think we're going to be fine.
Yeah, you're like, no, I need to go. So talk to me about this. So you do, though, see the possibility of that being something that could be viable for some people.
I think it can be viable. I think that for some people, depending on their attachment stuff, too. I think if you have a partner who is more anxiously attached, I don't think it's super effective.
Right, because I could see where...
for me, like, I'm anxiously attached. There's no way that would work for me. I'd lose my mind, probably.
And so those that are listening that aren't familiar with these terms, like, anxiously attached is someone who's hypersensitive, always on heightened alert that maybe their partner's leaving or wanting to leave and the relationship's in trouble. What other ways would you qualify?
Well, I think anxiously attached, they're all about connection and closeness. So maybe more their love language would be quality time and physical touch, all the things with the person actually in their space.
Right.
Anxiously attached people don't really understand the concept of, oh, I need space. I've never understood it personally.
Because it triggers abandonment.
It triggers abandonment, fears of abandonment. Whereas someone who's avoidantly attached is maybe more comfortable with that, and they value freedom more than they value the relationship.
And I feel like, I often feel like we need a fourth term that kind of sits between secure and anxiously attached, because I agree that the anxiously attached person is someone who, again, is always thinking the relationship's rocky, or when the partner needs space, they see it as abandonment. Mm. But I feel like there's got to be another version where they want a lot of closeness and intimacy, but it's not an anxious-based thing,
right.
And it's not preventative,
right.
It's not abandonment-based. It's just, I like a lot of closeness and depth and intimacy.
Yes, because
I tend to skew that way, where
it
wouldn't fall under what we tend to call securely attached. Some people might say it does, but I think there's an in-between where I'd like a lot of closeness and time together.
Me too.
I want you, while you're gone, to send me photos and pictures and check in. But it's not
what
attempt
kind
of control.
Photos?
It's not a fear of you leaving. It's not anxiety-based. It's just that, like, I like a lot of presence.
Right. So that's not necessarily anxiously attached, right? I mean, I understand. And I think as you grow and you're more comfortable with yourself, it's not necessarily anxiously attached. It's just knowing what your needs and your wants are. And and maybe you can appear needy, though, when you need something and you don't get it.
That's right.
Right.
So tonight we're talking with Rebecca Shida for our couples therapy session. And we're talking about, you know, this whole concept of people living apart while together. And I think we're going to see more of it. I think we see more people feeling as though they don't need to follow the standard practices, and that they can show love and intimacy and commitment while not cohabitating. Because I've seen some interviews with some other relational experts, and they'll talk about how removing the pressure around dishes and all these other minor stumbles can be really powerful for some couples, and it can help them have some, like, alone time. I've been in some relationships where I loved living with them and I love being with them, but it would have been nice to maybe have a day or two where I could go to bed on my own somewhere else, have my own space, have some more independence, and be able to kind of cycle back and forth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
that's
again,
that's what hotels are for.
That's why we now have Airbnb. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll be talking more with Rebecca Shida about the behaviors that are powerful predictors of divorce. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and tonight we're doing our couples therapy. So, of course, we got licensed therapist Rebecca Shida with us. What's up?
Hey, how are you, Chris?
Good. So, I want to quick talkly about some of the reliable predictors of divorce, because there's work out there that, based on the studies they're doing, they're able to predict with a lot of accuracy some common behaviors that lead to relationships falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's kind of, and tell me what you think about this. Would you say it's more problematic couples tend to do this, so see it as a red flag that's falling apart, or see it as a warning sign to not engage in these behaviors so as to not get to a place where your marriage is falling apart? Or do you think it's both?
I feel like I just, like, lost you in that train of thought.
Is it more a sign of don't do these, or is it more a sign if you see these, it's time to go?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, a lot of times you see these things also relationally before the marriage, too. You know, right? So you're going to be seeing those things usually. But if you're in your relationship and you're seeing these things, yes, it's a predictor.
Right.
That's also what they're
get
saying.
Into some couples therapy, right? Like,
yes,
these are the signs, like, get
definitely.
That work going. So one of the big ones that, and we'll kind of cycle through a bunch of them, but one of the big ones that I always see is the whole stonewalling.
Oh, that's my favorite.
So break it down for some people.
Oh,
stonewalling.
Lord. Stonewalling is fun. It's usually when a partner is trying to communicate with you about a problem or an issue, and the other partner literally becomes a wall. They get quiet. They shut down. They may leave the room. They cut you off in conversation. They will say things like, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not having this conversation. Things like that, that really shut down the communication and leave you feeling, you know, oftentimes for some people, scared, abandoned, what's going to happen, what's going on, you know, because hopefully what you're doing in a relationship is communicating and resolving, and that's kind of shutting the communication.
Yeah. In yeah. those relationships, when someone enacts that, I feel so alone.
It's awful.
I feel so unknown, because I think we talk a lot about its use in terms of like conflict, but it can also show up just in standard moments of trying to share things.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was in a relationship where I would literally just try to share my day. I wasn't being emotional, which is when these things tend to get most triggered for people, that
right.
stonewall. I was just sharing my day, and they're stonewalling just that. Like, they didn't want to be present. They didn't
right.
want to be open. So it can be done not emotionally, too.
Right, right, sure. And you can experience that in anything, like with friendships or, you know, in romantic relationships.
I do that to
work.
You. Whenever you text me, I just go silent. I ignore
you.
Oh,
that's really nice. I noticed that. Thank you. I feel very alone, and I get into the fetal position
you.
And get in the corner, and I rock and cry.
I see Rebecca's text coming in. I start stonewalling. So another one that I think is really important to talk about is this whole contempt. And I think this is actually one of the most toxic things, is if you're in a relationship and you have contempt mm-hmm. for that person, and I don't mean that you are frustrated at them. I don't mean they disappointed you. I don't mean you're angry. You have contempt.
Mm-hmm.
You do not like this person.
Mm-hmm.
Please get out of that relationship
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
yourself and them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Right. I think that's true. And at the same time, too, I don't like this idea of whole object constancy, like, is really hard for some people. So some people, especially people that have narcissistic traits, have a trouble like being angry, having
right.
having some contempt or anger, and loving the person at the same time.
Which is one of the most difficult things to do,
right.
one of the healthiest, most necessary
Absolutely.
Things.
It's so necessary for a relationship. If you dislike somebody, and then at that point you've decided you don't care about them at all, that's really can hurt the relationship, because it doesn't give you the sense of like, God, I really am angry at you. I almost hate you right now, but I also really love you and I want to work this through. That kind of motivates you to work it through.
Yeah.
You can hold those things in the same space.
Because before tonight, we're talking with Rebecca Shida for our couples therapy segment about signs that show you that your relationship's heavily in trouble. In fact, some laboratory studies show that these are signs your marriage is actually over. And we're talking about contempt. And what you just said was so powerful, because, you know, you love someone and then something is said or done, and in a second
mm-hmm.
you are disconnected from the person you loved a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to stick around and resolve whatever was just done that injured you,
mm-hmm.
you have to be able to reconnect
right.
to the fact that I hate you so much right now, but I also still love you.
And, right.
If we can master that, we would be doing so much better in terms of mental health in our culture.
That's so true.
Because your
so
friend
true.
Lets you down and you cut them out and it's like, I'm sorry, but a minute ago that was your best friend. Like, well, I hate them now. And it's like, it's both. It's got to be both.
Yeah.
Holding that, both.
Teens are like that all the time.
Yes.
But that's the teenage narcissism.
Yeah.
But, you know, love you one day, hate you the next. But that is it's serious issue that I think really does, like, those are some of those toxic red flags,
yeah.
too.
And it's one of the things I'll bring up with couples that might reach out to me panicking while away on vacation. Like, Dr. Chris, we need a session. They want to go through something on email. And I say to them, while you're away, this is not the time to deal with things that aren't an immediate crisis. You need to shelve it and come back to it.
Mm.
And reconnect to the person that you loved seconds before that thing occurred. And go hug that person. Hug the part of them that you still do love
mm-hmm,
that you have
mm-hmm.
to be available to.
Absolutely.
And I think it's a beautiful practice
yeah.
and lesson.
Yes.
Another one is the whole criticism piece, where if you're constantly criticizing, you know, name calling, like, you never do this, you're lazy, why do you always? And one of the tools I always say is, instead of criticizing, make requests.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of
mm-hmm.
saying, what's wrong with you, you never do this or that,
mm-hmm.
say instead, hey, could you?
Mm-hmm.
It would be great if you.
Right, right. Yes, absolutely. I can see how I could definitely have been a criticizer in my relationship. And maybe sometimes when you are engaging in those behaviors, it's information to you that something's off, right?
I also say more.
Like, in terms of, like, with my ex-husband, it's like, can you please stop drinking? You're drinking too much. Like, you're out of control. You're lazy. You're not, you know, and I'm saying all these negative, horrible things. Well, they're not horrible. They're the truth. But basically, you know, I'm saying these things, and what comes back is information to me. If I'm saying these words, that's an indicator to me that something is off in the relationship. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And what would you counsel someone to do if they recognize that they are often in that situation? What should they be learning about themselves back?
Well, to me, for me, that was information about my own codependency and the fact that I wanted to control the relationship or the person in order to make the relationship okay.
Okay, why am I trying to fix them? Why am
yes.
I in here?
Yes.
Why am I in this?
Right, right.
Well, that's a rough one for some people to swallow.
Yeah, but that's good information because, you know, that's one of the things that came out of my marriage was the idea that I was controlling, and I still can hold in my mind, well, I was controlling because I had to control you because you were so out of control. But that's also information that, like, why am I in a relationship where
so
I'm working with, yeah, right, and also working with projects. Why am I
Because it also
doing
becomes that whole, you know, overfunction or underfunction.
Yeah, yeah.
Where in order for me to overfunction, I need to be in a relationship with someone who underfunctions.
Yes.
And in order for them to underfunction, they need to be with an overfunctioner. And we take those roles on.
Right.
I tend to always be the overfunctioner,
mm-hmm.
which is probably shocking to no one.
Exactly.
Like, I'm always the breadwinner. I always the income generator. And therefore, that also usually makes the person feel most empowered. The person who makes the most money or brings in the money tends to feel the most empowered and willing to take control.
Mm-hmm.
That's a phenomenal
Does it make you feel
shift.
Powerful?
I don't seek it. It just tends to happen.
Right.
And I have to always monitor, am I weaponizing the fact that I'm bringing in the money and I'm paying all the bills? Rebecca Ishida, where can people find you?
They can find me at hungrybecca.com on Instagram and rebeccaishida.com.
Brilliant. Coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. Got a question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Having a little going away party for producer Justin. He's leaving us. I posted some pictures on my IG. He's moving on to some new things, some new companies. So sad to see him go. But now time for some DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. Why? Because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore it with confidence. All right, here we go. Dear Dr. Chris, firstly, I'm a loyal fan of your show. Thank you. And I want to thank you for all the amazing work you do. I have a bit of an odd question. For context, my boyfriend and I have been together for 4 years. I would say I have a higher sex drive than him and often initiate sex. My question is there anything one can do to increase a man's libido, or is that directly related to testosterone? Thanks. You know, testosterone can be a factor. It tends to not be, because psychology and physicality can override testosterone levels, meaning with enough stimulation physically or psychologically, we can get ourselves to where we need to be. And that's really one of the two primary pieces around sex that feels really hot and arousing, is that the stimulation, the physical touch, the touch, the grip, all of those different pieces are going to be a component. Like, how good does that feel? And then also their psycho-emotional space. Do they feel safe? Do they feel relaxed? Are they turned on by what they're thinking, by what they're looking at? So those are all really important factors. Sexual libido is far more complex than just a hormone. It's so much bigger than that. So how can you increase it? You got to make the sex you're having worth wanting. You got to make the sex you're having hot and fun. And that tends to be what makes people not that interested in sex. The relational factor, how healthy is the relationship? Do they feel comfortable and safe with you? Is all well? Like, that's in there. Also their mood. Are they under a lot of stress? Are they sleep deprived? Because those factors will also decrease someone's sexual interest and libido. But also, again, I always say a lot of people aren't having a lot of sex because the sex they have isn't worth wanting. And so check in on that. Is the sex you're having hot? Is it the kind of sex that you're both turned on by? You ask. You know, what would you want to be doing if we're not doing what that is? What would you prefer to be doing? Is the way we're having sex feeling good? Do you like the way I touch you? Do the way I lick you? Do you like where I touch you? How I touch you? When I touch you? So much to unpack and explore. But I would start there, because if the sex is good, people are going to be desirous of it. Because libido is more about sexual desire. So factor in that. Are we getting kicked off? Is that what that little sound was? A little musical hiccup. So anyway, check in on that, because that actually tends to be what decreases someone's interest in sex, which is what we mean usually when we say libido, is relational factors, you know, the partner themselves, and then also, again, the sex they're having. So it's also just a good couple building exercise to talk about, what do you like? Do you like what we're doing? Most people have not done that. It's a lot of mind reading and assumptions going on. And a lot of people are having boring sex. So anyway, I say that with love. Why are you laughing over there?
You're a comedian.
I'm a comedian. All right, Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore the confidence. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about ways to make long-distance relationships work, but more importantly, this ridiculous study about the timeline of normal relationships. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Question of the night, it's up on our 11 IG page. It's signs that your relationship has fallen apart. Weigh in on that. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show. But I got to read something with you guys. So I was looking at this article. I'm always looking at something. I'm always writing something, working on something. And I really thought that there might be something interesting that came out of this. But instead, it just made me laugh. So I was looking at this documentation, and it was looking at the average timeline of normal relationships. I don't, again, know what a normal relationship is. I certainly don't have those. But the average timeline and what people are doing at how many months into a relationship. Ready for this one? So in a normal relationship, again, whatever the hell that means, about two and a half months in, that is the milestone, is normally that people start meeting each other's friends. 2.5 months in. Really? What are y'all waiting for? Like, it's such an interesting normative value where people are like, well, I don't want them to meet my friends too soon. Really, why? If I'm dating someone and my friends are around or available, they meet them an hour in, because if that person's there, and if they're never there again, I'm like, remember that person you met? Yeah, they're not there anymore. Like, it's so fascinating that people create these things as milestones. Y'all do what you need to do, but that was interesting to me. It gets even funkier. So at about 3 months in, people stop wearing makeup. No, that was interesting. MEQ. Did you get to a milestone in your relationship where you're like, time to not wear makeup? Or do you just wear makeup when you want and when you don't?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I love her answer from across the room. She's like, I'm not getting up. Yeah.
This is not that significant of an answer. Yeah, it's not like I was like, okay, I feel secure enough not to wear makeup. It's like, I'm staying over and I'm going to shower. So I'm not going to put makeup on after I shower.
They're saying in a normal relationship, whatever that means, 3 months in is when people usually just stop wearing makeup altogether. And I'm like, that's foreign to me. Okay. Go back to the corner. So here's another one. At 5 months in is when people standardly start farting in front of each other. At about five months in.
I do it the first night.
You do it the first night?
Yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Get on the mic. I'm getting everyone that's in the room on the mic.
Okay.
So first night, you'll just bust butt.
Yeah, I mean, if I have gas, I'm not going to just, you know, let it pile up or anything inside my stomach. If it wants to come out, it's going to come out.
Do you step outside the room or do you just rip right there?
Oh, no, I'll be courteous. I'm not going to do it like right in front. I'm not going to like do it right on them.
Okay, but how soon until you'll do it next to them on the couch?
Oh, honestly, it probably just has happened. I don't plan to do it next to someone, but if it happens, I'm like, oh, my bad. Like if it does bother you, I'm going to walk out. My bad. And if not, then I'm just going to be like, it didn't happen. Or
it's such a fascinating one. My ex. Yeah. Whenever, wherever, however, would laugh. We'd be with friends and we'd all be like, what does that smell? Oh, there it's you. And okay. Some people wait 5 full months. I don't really have my own personal stance on that. I don't really know. I think it's case by case for me. Okay. Hang by the mic, though. We might have more things we want to hear about. So now we start to get into what we call toxic monogamy, because the fact that they're even talking about these things. Anyway, let me just share it with you. So at about 7 months in, ready for this one? Around 7 months in a normal relationship is when people start sharing their laptop, phone, and social media passwords. I never share that because I don't know why I would. I'm not trying to, but why would I? Right? How long have you been in your relationship, Emmy?
Over a year.
Did you share all your passwords?
No.
Right, because why are you? Why would you, right?
Yeah, it's not like, here's my phone password in case you're questioning something. Like,
because it just is. You trust each other.
Yeah. And I mean, like, there's been times where, like, he's been on my laptop and I, like, locked out and I just told him the password because I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah,
no,
casual.
I feel like, personally, I'm like, yo, like, if you want to use my computer, here's my password. Like, it's signed
casual.
Into anything.
Yeah. Casual.
It's not like, like, I'm expecting you to go through all my pictures and, like, see pictures of other people that I've stockpiled.
Stockpile. Because they're saying here in 7 months, phone passwords are given, laptop and social media access. But the way it's being discussed, an email password. But wait, this is the best one. Okay, so you've been with your boo for a year. Ready for this one? In a normal relationship at 9 months, they've exchanged online bank details.
What?
Yeah, what?
For why?
Exactly. What are you looking for? What are you doing in there?
That's
people
so
are
weird.
So weird. Yeah. What do you need at any, I mean, I can see.
Unless it's like, oh, look, my account's like overdrafted. Would you just like zell me? But like, I need you to sign in. So here's the information.
In a normal standard relationship, at 9 months, you've given online bank details. And like, if we're married and we have joint accounts, I can see. But otherwise, y'all don't need to be logging into my checking account. Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Like, hey, babe, here's my routing number. Yes. Have fun.
What?
Like, you know how there's steps, there are milestones. So you give your key, a spare key. You give your routing number. Like, you just start to like, I don't know. It sounds just, some to me, I immediately go to like toxic monogamy things where people, it's about control and no secrets. And it's like, if you trust someone, you casually share things. But like, I don't know. Anyway, maybe another day we'll come back to the rest of these, because these were just shocking to me. All right, there it is, kids. Coming up next, we're going to be doing a little Freak on the Streets, listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, if all of a sudden you just hear dead air and silence, it's because the paint fumes that are emerging from underneath us have knocked us all out in the studio. We are in an airtight studio. There are paint fumes coming from underneath. Producer Emmy is doing, I don't know what she's doing. Producer Jeffrey is buried in a sweatshirt. Emmy, why are you not passing out? She's already dead. Because Jeffrey is literally so dramatic over there with his mouth covered. Go get some air. All right. Time for some Freak on the Streets.
Freak on the Streets.
What you got?
So last time, I had the question about being unprotected and having unprotected sex. I think you guys called it fluid sharing. I did end up getting on birth control, and then we did end up having sex without a condom. We were, I guess, just too excited, and he ended up getting an actual little small tear when we were switching positions. Then he started noticing discomfort during urination. So he went to Planned Parenthood, got tested, he came out negative. Even though he's clean, he wants to go to his actual physician and get a blood test for herpes. So I just kind of feel like, you know, he's basically saying like, I gave him herpes. And it's causing like a little bit of a rift. We just started dating, so it's kind of weird, but he's being super sweet about it. He's just like, I just need to make sure for me. I just don't really know how to like handle it.
Okay. So let's unpack a few things, and I'm going to first come at you with love, all the love in the world. So someone coming back with a negative test means they came back with a negative test. Some people do. I'm learning to rephrase it. Not we don't. It doesn't mean that someone's clean, because if we say someone's clean because they don't have any STDs or STIs, it implies that people that did come back positive are dirty, and they're not. They just came back positive for something, and they're going to require treatment. So I just want us to be a little more thoughtful with the language we use. Let's just use accurate languaging. His test came back negative. Okay, great. I'm not sure where the herpes piece is coming from. Herpes doesn't cause painful urination. It could be an infection in his urethra. It could be a few things, but that might be the cause. Again, use the word tear. I'm not exactly sure what that means necessarily. So I think it's good he's going to go see a primary care physician, because again, Planned Parenthood, it sounds like, did an STD panel. But technically left out the herpes test, which most actually do. And there's a multitude of reasons why. A, because it's a secondary test, requires blood work, it's more expensive. And also because the high rate of herpes, few tests, because they figure that you've come in contact or have it. That's a topic for another show. But he doesn't have a right to make you feel bad because, excuse me, eating too many Oreos. Burping them back up now. That's how it goes, y'all. But he doesn't have a right to make you feel bad, because we can never pinpoint where an STD or an STI, if that's what he has, which I do not believe it is that, where it came from. It could have come from partners prior to him. He could have been asymptomatic, which is absolutely what happens. People do get tested and it's a false positive or a false negative. And unless he was tested a monogamous with every partner prior, using condoms even for things like oral. And remember, even making out can exchange things like gonorrhea. We can get gonorrhea in our throats. So again, it's always about safer sex, but he doesn't have a right to make you feel as though it was your fault, because again, we don't give STDs, we take them. Unless someone has knowingly withheld that information, then you took it from someone, because it's two people without knowing as adults engaging in a situation, and both parties are responsible. So again, informed consent is if you know that you are putting someone at risk for something, you share that. And if not, you both have to take accountability and responsibility. He should have asked questions. He should have gotten both of you tested. So, you know, it falls on him too. So you have my support in pushing back on him and not letting him make you feel bad. Let's hear what else we got.
Hi, I have a question around the topic of ghosting. I recently went on a date with someone about 2 weeks ago, and out of nowhere, they just started not responding. And I was wondering, like, what are some ways we can go about letting someone know that we might not be feeling it, but without completely ghosting?
I love this question, and I love that you're asking it because it implies that you have care and compassion. Look, when you start dating someone and there's some kind of connection and time put into it, there's a responsibility and accountability you have to this other human being. And the most beautiful thing you can do is be direct and honest. Use the right words. You know, people will appreciate knowing exactly where you stand and what's going on. So again, clear, precise language. I say that in general. If you ask someone out, ask them on a date. Use the word date. Don't say let's hang out, because people don't sometimes know what that means. So if it's a date, say, do you want to go on a date? If you're ending it with someone, say, unfortunately, we need to end it. Clear and concise. The way I tend to do is I send a text message. I'm okay with you sending a text message. I do not care with what method. I don't believe that texting, phone calls, and all that. No. Whatever you need to do to get it done, because some people, if they don't text, it's not going to happen. I'm cool with that. I send texts because that's how I communicate with people, because I work a lot. And the text says things like, hey, it's been really cool hanging out with you. Unfortunately, the chemistry doesn't seem to be there. I'm not interested in hanging out again. You seem, you know, you're super rad. All the best. Clear, concise words. I don't say I want to be friends. I don't use vague things. I don't breadcrumb and keep them hanging around. Direct, honest. That's what you got to do. But I'm glad you asked. We got to ask that more. It's important, you know? All right, y'all. Coming up next, question of the night. Still some time to weigh in on that. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.
All right. Thanks for that. We're back. Time for question of the night.
Question of the night.
All right. Tonight's question of the night is signs that your relationship's falling apart. God bless. God bless. All right. Here we go. What y'all got to say? Y'all said avoiding conversations, letting things that upset you go by without addressing them. Yep. Yep. That's also how you get some resentment built. You got to tackle those issues. Got to tackle them when they're minuscule, right? Before they just kind of simmer underneath, become resentful. And then at some point it leads to contempt, and then you're done. Pretty much. When it gets that far and that deep, bad. Someone else said the sound of them chewing makes you want to punch them in the throat. Yeah, it's definitely a sign things are going bad. When everything's starting to annoy you. I mean, it's funny because in the beginning, it's all cute. Everything they do is adorable. Soon it flips. Goes from adorable to I can't stand when you. I know. Not good sign, y'all. So Nell said, yeah, this is a good one. You know your relationship's falling apart when they stop texting you. Yeah. Yep. Not only is it falling apart, it is non-existent. Yes, it is done. Dunzos. Signs that your relationship's falling apart when you don't ever want to have sex. Ever. Yeah, it's a bad sign. It's a bad sign. We've gotten very comfortable with that. We think for something it's a normal stage of relationship. It can be, but it's usually a symptom of something. Got to look in on that. But yeah, that's not good, especially the ever. And the longer it goes, the harder it is to get back to it. We can very easily fully de-eroticize someone. It can be very, very, very hard. Something you got to maintain. Someone else said when you don't want to have sex. I know. Y'all, you're speaking my language. I will leave a relationship so quickly if that's not happening. It's important to me. It's a love language. It's a resource and a tool. It's accessible to us. I want to use it. I enjoy it. There's a lot of development in it. Yeah, it's a bummer. You know, it's important. So I'll say when you don't trust them anymore, that's probably the most powerful one. When the trust is gone, you got to go. Because that is the basis of so much. And I don't even just mean trust as in trust to not hurt me, right? I mean trust on those deep levels that you're there, that you care about me, that you're in this with me, presence. So yeah, and the trust is gone. Yeah, that's not good. I mean, there are ways to try to kind of build that back, but when it is like gone and you realize it's not going to be able to come back and that the damage is too deep or the distance is too deep, it's rough. Someone else said, as far as when relationships are falling apart, indifference. Yeah. Sounds like a little bit of a neutral word, but that's actually a big, powerful word, indifference. When you just don't care, you know, either way, not cared. Someone else said when you stop having sex and sleep in separate rooms and the very thought of her makes you gag. Yeah, you hit a trifecta with that one. No sex, separate rooms, and thought of a makes you gag. Yeah. Somebody else said signs that the relationship is falling apart, lack of communication. Yep. And the communication shuts down and you start going silent, which kind of goes back to the indifference and not caring anymore. It's a rough one. Someone else said lack of check-ins. I agree. It's a sign someone's not caring anymore and they're just not checking in, not keeping up. They don't care. Someone else said it's at a negative standstill and not moving forward in any way, like a shark. Oh, I like that. Yep. Someone else said lack of sex is a sign that relationships falling apart. Question tonight, signs relationships falling apart. Someone else said not willing to go to therapy and thinking everything's okay when reality hasn't hit. I know, right? It's a good sign when they're willing to go to therapy. It means they're still in it. They still hold hope. They still care. They still love you. They still see a future. You know, it's a good sign. Couples therapy is a really important thing when things are going well and things are not going so well. I mean, it can really help you stabilize. It can help you never get to some of those problematic places. It can teach you some better relational skills. Someone else said signs relationships falling apart, feeling disconnected, no communication, person doesn't seem interested no more. Yeah, I know. There it is. Rough. That's an indifference again. I'm liking that word for this. Someone else said when they'd much rather hang out with their cat instead of you. Sounds like me. Sounds like me. All right. Thanks to those that participated. That's all we have time for. Coming up next, we'll be sliding into those DMs. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. We're back. Time for some DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore it with confidence. All right, we got two DMs. The first one I don't got much to say about. Hey, Dr. Chris, I keep seeing on my timeline people sharing a post that says it's not about heterosexuality or homosexuality. It's about promoting sexuality, period. Let kids be kids. And so many people feel this way. Can you explain why is this thinking problematic? This is very out of context, and I haven't seen this. But what I think it might be about is people are saying we're not. It doesn't matter if it's a hetero or homo, the movie, the meme, the picture, the situation, the topic, it's sexual either way. And we want kids to be kids and we don't want to be talking or have them encountering or having to see sex. That's how I'm kind of hearing it. And they're trying to say it's not about whether it's gay or heterosex. We're keeping kids away from sex because they're kids. Well, kids are sexual. Let me just put it out there. In utero, they have erections. In utero, they're touching themselves. Kids are masturbating from birth. They can derive pleasure from their entire body and genitals from birth. Sexuality is always with them. It happens pre-adolescence, during adolescence, eroticism, sexuality, dear God in heaven. So we need to teach kids language and to learn how to encounter sexuality at different age-appropriate steps. We don't want to instill fear and shame. And so as it's seen or heard or comes up, which it will, we can't put them under rocks. We have to learn, we have to teach them how to encounter what that is, give them languaging, let them ask questions. And when they ask a question, you give them honest, frank answers. Sex isn't bad or scary, but we're raising kids to think that. Again, there's about boundaries, age appropriateness, consent, and all that, but it's not bad or scary. We don't need to protect them from, we need to teach them how to engage it because they will. Remember, by 17, age 17, about 75% of kids have had sex. So we want kids to learn and understand how to encounter it, not hide them from it. So, all right. Oh, okay. Here we go. Another one. Hey, Dr. Chris, I feel very insecure about many things, especially when it comes to dating and socializing. How can I increase my confidence? Practice. Practice. Got to get out there and practice. There's no other way. Cognitively, I would just say, find people you feel comfortable and safe with. Before going on a date, get them on the phone, like small measures leading up so it's not so overwhelming and anxiety-inducing. Go to places where you do feel safe, comfortable, and interested. Go to places you've been before, places you're very familiar with, the same restaurants, the same galleries, the same movie theaters. So at least the environment's familiar, but it's practice. You got to do more of it. That's when you get comfortable with it. That's always my advice. Get out there and do tons of it. Go online and practice the skills of getting on the phone and talking, but go online. Because online allows you to slowly have conversations at your own comfort and pace. Then you can take it to text message. Then you can get on the phone and talk for a while. Then you can FaceTime and then you can meet up. And each stage will allow itself to build on the one before and enhance your confidence and see the acceptance and desirability from this other person and go to places that you feel familiar with. Sign the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. That's our show. As always, podcast at wearechannelq.com. We'll be back Monday night. Y'all, thanks for hanging out. And have an awesome, awesome night.